So we are doing the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which talks about the Lord Himself. So it's a very, very beautiful chapter called Vibhuti Yoga. And just to summarize a little bit, yoga and vibhuti has been used in different places in the Bhagavad Gita in different ways. But here, when the Lord is talking about Vibhuti Yoga, the teacher, he says Vibhuti is the glories of the Lord, where you can see the Lord in everything that is glorious, everything that is beautiful, the rising sun, the full moon, you know, the blooming flower, the face of a child, where you can see the Lord's presence very clearly, the rainbow in the sky, waterfalls, mountains. So these are the beauties or the glories of the Lord as seen outside. So that is the macrocosm, where you can, and then the yoga is where I see him as close to me, as the microcosm, as within me. How can I see the Lord within me as what? So outside I see his, all his glories, and within me, how do I see the Lord? So this chapter talks about the glories of the Lord. The idea being that, not that the Lord wants to glorify himself. Later on in the chapter, he will talk about, I am this, among the mountains, I am Mount Everest, and among the birds, I am the eagle, and so on. It's not that he wants to glorify himself. The idea is that whenever you see anything beautiful, anything glorious, you remember the Lord. When you see an Olympic athlete breaking records, or you see an artist make a beautiful painting or a wonderful poem, and you see how the Lord's glory shines in those. So that is what we will be studying later on in this chapter. But in the first few verses, the Lord says that I am the creator of this whole universe. Everything emerged from me, even the earliest Adam and Eve. If you can believe, or some people say we emerged from four rishis, you know, who were the first. The idea is that everything came from me. And one who knows me knows everything. Because once you know the essence, you know everything. Like once you have understood the nature of mud, you know all the parts, mud parts. Every mud part, you know what it is made of and what is the substance. Once you have understood a lump of gold, a brick of gold, you have understood all the gold ornaments. So he says, you need to know me, you need to learn about me through devotion, through service, what he called as bhajante. Bhajante does not only mean to sing loudly my glories, but to see me in all beings and serve me. And then last time, before Christmas, we had done the 9th and the 10th verse, where the Lord says that one who puts his mind or her mind totally in me, thinks about me at all times. Not only that, but when he or she meets other people, instead of talking useless gossip about some, you know, person's personal problem or whatever, when they meet, they talk about me. They talk about the Lord. And those are the people to whom I give them buddhi yoga. I give them the knowledge. I think Barbara had asked last time that the intellect cannot reach him. The intellect cannot know him. Physically, we or mentally cannot understand or know the Lord with our intellect. But then when our devotion is strong enough, then he himself reveals himself to us. And how does that happen? That has been explained in more detail in the 11th verse, which talks about the process of how, actually these verses are so beautiful because they take you right up to self-realization. If you practice this sincerely, you can reach very close to the truth. They say that the scriptures and the books cannot completely define the truth, but they can bring us very close. And I think these verses will bring you as close as the human words can. And that's the glory of this Bhagavad Gita, that it brings you very, very close to the truth. And if you apply that in your knowledge, in your life, and practice it, you will surely progress in your spiritual journey. And ultimately, then the last step is up to him. last step is when your devotion is complete, then the Lord reveals himself, herself, itself, because the Lord is beyond any sex. So that's why in Vedanta, the Lord is referred to as Brahman. Brahman is a neutral tense. It's neither male nor female. So the consciousness is all-pervading, is neither male nor female, even though we refer to God as him, but actually it is the energy. It is like electricity. It's not a male or a female electricity. Electricity is the energy. So similarly, the consciousness. That's why Brahman is always referred to as neutral tense in the Sanskrit. So we'll do verse number 11. Those who have it can please chant. Tesham evanukam partham. Aham ajnana jam tamah. Nashayamyatma bhavasthah. Jnana deepena bhasvata. So tesham means to them. Now who are the them? The Lord is referring to, he is referring to the people in the 10th verse. The people in the 10th verse who totally devote their mind to me, talk about me, discuss about me, serve me, remember me. So to those people, Eva, to those people alone. See, that is very important, because to evolve in any field, you have to make your number one priority. If you want to be a good computer programmer, you cannot say, I'm only going to read about computers from 10 to 11 on Sunday, and the rest of the week I'm not going to touch the computer. You'll never be a good computer programmer, but that's what we do. I've gone to church or temple 10 to 11 Sunday, ho gaya bas. I'm done for the week. Okay, goodbye God, I'll see you next Sunday. That's not the way. Ever, you have to make him your number one goal, your number one priority, just as a person who wants his business to be successful. He doesn't say, I'm only going to spend a half an hour every morning, you know, for my business and the rest of 23 and a half hours. No. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Even in his sleep, he's thinking about dollars and cents and how to expand the business. So that has to be the extent of our devotion to the Lord. And that can happen. You might say, it is impossible. But if you look in the lives of saints, they did it. You look at the life of Mirabai or Tukaram or Jesus or Buddha. I mean, they devoted their whole life to knowing and serving the Lord. So it is possible. If they can do it, surely we can do it too. Because they also were humans like us. They walked on two legs and they had the same situation. Mirabai had a family too. She had a husband and, you know, a kingdom, and she was the queen. And despite all that, she was able to accomplish. Buddha was the king, was the prince, and had a wife and child. But so if they can do it, we can also do it. All we have to do is decide that that is what I want in my life. So tesham eva, to those people alone, anukampartham. Kampartham means compassion. Anu means constant compassion. So the Lord is constantly compassionate towards us, and we'll talk about that in a while. But total, complete compassion he has for us and for all of us, not only for those who remember him, but he is compassionate to all. So he says, for those people, I, the Lord says, ajnana jam tamaha. Tamaha means the darkness of ignorance, which we'll talk about here in the chart, but tamas means the darkness of ignorance. So ajnana jama. Jama means born out of ignorance. So they have darkness in their mind out of ignorance, and they do not know me. So what do I do? Nashayami. I destroy that darkness. I destroy that ignorance. Atma bhavasthaha. Stationed in their own heart. See, the Lord is there in everyone's heart. Here we have illustrated it as Om. But he's in our heart as Jesus or as Krishna or Buddha or consciousness or Atman or soul. So he said, I am stationed in the heart of all beings and I destroy their ignorance. How? By the knowledge of by the light of knowledge. Jnana deepena bhasvata, by the brilliant light of knowledge. And in our scriptures and in everywhere, when you look at it, ignorance is referred to as darkness. You know, he's in the darkness of ignorance. And then when the person sees, he's, oh, I see. Then suddenly the light shines. It's not that suddenly a light shines, but it's the light of knowledge. His eyes become, you know, I cannot understand this math problem. You know, and he's so depressed. And then suddenly when the teacher explains it or the mother explains it, he says, oh, now I understand. So it's called the light of knowledge. So the Lord says that I destroy the ignorance of these people because of my compassion. How? With the light of knowledge. And how can the Lord do that? He says, because I am stationed. I am in your heart. You know, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddesher junatishthati brahmiya sarva bhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. He says, Krishna says in another place in the Gita, O Arjuna, the Lord is there, sarva bhutanam hriddesher. He is in the heart of every one of us. And he is the one that's enlivening your heart and moving your eyes and your ability to see and your ability to talk and hold and touch, whatever you are doing is because of the Lord's presence. So let us study this verse in a little bit of detail. And then Swamiji in his commentary has talked of some concepts which I think were a little difficult. So I'll try to simplify them. So tesham eva, to them alone, anukampartham, with total compassion. And we see that the Lord is ever, ever compassionate to every one of us. Even when, if there is any problem or any suffering, we see that there is a purpose in that. That this is the way for us to wake up, to turn towards Him, and to wake up from our ignorance. Just as a doctor, when he is giving you a shot, you might say, oh, you know, he's such a horrible doctor. He's poking me with a needle, or he cuts open your belly. And then you say, oh my God. No, they're doing it out of compassion, because they know that even though the shot is hurting you and the little child is crying when he's getting his immunizations, but the pediatrician knows that I'm doing it for the child's benefit, out of compassion. And the child may cry for 10 minutes, but he will be safe from diseases for the rest of his life. So compassion is a very important attribute in anybody. If you look in a physician, they have to have compassion. A good teacher, he has to have, or she has to have, love and compassion for the children. Only then she will be a successful teacher. So the Lord is supremely compassionate. You know, whatever we have, He is constantly showering gifts, you know, of life upon us, the rainwater that is coming, this beautiful sunshine, the air, you know, all the flowers blooming. And sometimes I wonder, you know, look at the variety of fruits. You know, what beautiful variety of fruits. I mean, when we were traveling recently in Cambodia and Bali, and we saw fruits that we had never seen in the States. And same way when you go to Australia, and oh my God, there's different variety of fruits and different variety of strange animals and flowers. And I remember we were diving off the coast of Australia where all the fish are. And there, I mean, you see thousands of fish. Everyone is of a different color. Every fish, there is no fish that repeats the color. And all varieties. And all this beauty He has created for us, all the different grains and the different vegetables, it's all out of compassion. And we sometimes, at least I personally, feel that we do not deserve it. You know, we do things that are not right. We do things that, you know, we disobey the laws, the spiritual laws, or we sometimes become angry or become hateful. But His compassion and love for us is continuous. Is ever on. Even somebody who is an absolute criminal and a murderer, mass murderer, who goes around killing, the Lord still gives him air and water and life and everything, because He says, you know, they are all my children. Yes, you know, some are doing good and some are doing bad, but His love and compassion never ends. In fact, it is said in so many places that even if you have committed sins, but if you turn to me in total love and surrender, I will give you also forgiveness and give you realization. We have all heard the story of Valmiki, you know, who was a criminal. He used to kill people and steal their money. But one day he met a teacher who told him that what you are doing is wrong. And from that day on, he decided that I'm not going to do anything sinful. And he sat down and meditated upon the Lord for years, chanting Ram, Ram, Ram. And after several years, when he came out of his meditation, he was a realized saint. And all his sins had been forgiven. So the idea is that does not mean that one has to go around committing sins. But the fact is that if you turn to the Lord with love, even if you are going through a bad situation, and we know that whatever sorrows come to us are not given by Him, but they are as a result of our own karmas. But when you turn to Him in love and compassion, He actually gives you the strength to fight those sorrows. And also they say the sorrows can be ameliorated, can be reduced when we turn towards Him. So that is the beauty of this, the Lord's love, compassion and forgiveness. Even in the Bible they talk about it, that the Lord forgives everybody. So when you turn towards Him. And then he says the darkness of ignorance. So there are three kinds of gunas that we always work under: sattva, rajas and tamas. Tamas being ignorance, rajas being agitation, and sattva being purity or knowledge. So when we are in meditation or doing prayer or in the company of saints and listening to, you know, their discourses, and we are in the sattva, or early in the morning when you wake up and your mind is peaceful, rajas and tamas are the two states that cause all our problems. If we were in sattva, like in the lives of saints, majority of the time they are in sattva. Most of us, majority of the time, are in rajas or in agitation or in ignorance. So what they say, ignorance is our vasanas, our selfish tendencies, which mask the truth from us. The truth being the consciousness. The Lord is the truth, He is the life, and He is there everywhere. He is everywhere in everything, including in my heart. But why am I not able to see Him? Because of tamas, because of ignorance. So what happens when there is ignorance? One is to say, I don't know. But see, most of us don't want to say, I don't know. You know, that is something that, like a new neighbor moved into your house, I mean next to your house, right? So you've seen him walk up and down, and so somebody will come and ask you, how's that new neighbor? He says, I don't know very well, but I think he's a rascal. how did you decide? No, because your own mind is negative, and because we have rascality in us, so we see everybody as rascals. And another person on the other side, you ask him, and he's a very gentle person, and you say, how's that new neighbor? He says, I don't know him very well, but I think he's a very nice person. So it is our own mind that projects. So when I don't know something, I will not say, I don't know. You know, in India, it is very common. You know, you stop on the road, and they don't have very good signs. Of course, GPS, I remember those days, was not there. And so you're driving and you don't know the road, and you will stop and ask somebody, you know, where is Shivaji Road or whatever. Now they'll never say, I don't know. They'll say, Agal jao. They say, Malum. They'll say, keep going further. Whether they know it or not, nobody will ever admit. And then you have to be sure whether this guy knows or not. So then you ask a second and if they all say, Agal jao, then you go. So the point is that we never want to admit that I don't know. Why? Because our nature is chit. See, we have three aspects of our nature: Sat, Chit, Anand. The consciousness, which is really our true nature. We are of the nature of consciousness. We think we are this limited body, and that is our ignorance. And the consciousness consists of three aspects of the Lord, which is Sat, Chit and Anand. Sat means ever-existing, ever-existing. Chit means all-knowing, Chit means all-knowing. And Anand means blissful, Anand means blissful. So because our nature is Sat, we want to live forever. Even a person who is very old and has had a stroke and he's suffering and he has cancer, you still ask him, you know, do you want to give up? No, no, no. I want to go for a second opinion. They tell you have cancer all over. You have only 1-2 months to live. That's okay. Then he'll go to the Mayo Clinic or he'll go to the, you know, Houston or all these places for second and third opinions. Why? Because we want to live forever. That is our nature, Sat. The second aspect of the nature is Chit. Chit means consciousness, awareness. So I am of the nature of Chit or consciousness, but because I identify with my limited body, I have limited knowledge. But inside I am of that nature, so I don't want to admit I don't know. And then I am of the nature of Anand or bliss. And we are always looking for happiness. Always looking for bliss in the next ice cream or in the next, you know, new house I buy or the next sari or the next jewelry or the next job or the next $1 million. So we are always thinking that happiness is round the corner, you know, the next step. Our scriptures tell us that happiness is here and now, but we are always postponing our happiness. After retirement, I'll enjoy. Right now, I'm working hard. But after I turn 65, then I will have fun, I'll travel. By then you'll be too old to travel. You may not even be able to. So they say, do what has to be done now. And even to realize the truth, even to pursue spirituality, it has to be done right now. Not in the future, not in after retirement, after 70, you know, then I will sit down and read the Bhagavad Gita. But then you may not even be able to understand. You may not even be able to apply. Even if you understand the Bhagavad Gita, it's too late because you cannot apply it in your life. So they say spiritual studies should be done right now. And then not only that, we sometimes postpone our happiness to the future. I'll work hard in this world, but then I'll enjoy in heaven when I go to heaven. For Christians, for Hindus, it is next life, you know. So we always postpone our happiness. Talking about heaven reminds me of this story. There was this Sunday school going on and the teacher asks, there were a bunch of children, how many of you want to go to heaven? So everybody raised their hand except one boy. You know, he kept his hand down. So he looked around and again said, how many of you want to go to heaven? Loudly. So everybody had their hand up. This guy still has his hand down. So he looks at him. He says, John, don't you want to go to heaven after you die? He said, oh, after you die. I thought you were arranging a trip right now. I don't want to go. So that is how we do it. You know, we always postpone our happiness in the future. But the point is that we are of the nature of Sat, Chit and Anand. So ignorance is not our true nature. Tamas is not our true nature. We are of the nature of sattva, purity. And then actually we have to go even beyond sattva to the highest. So, but how does rajas and tamas mask us? Now the God is there in within our heart. Why am I not able to see him? Because of the darkness of tamas, because of the ignorance of tamas, the rajas agitation projects. So I cannot see something, so I project something like my neighbor. I don't know how he is. But I project rascality on him because the rajas, again, doesn't want to say, I don't know. It wants to talk. It wants to do something. So these two factors are the ones that shield this knowledge from us, that I am that Brahman, I am that consciousness. It is because of rajas and tamas. Of course, the famous example of the rope and the snake, which obviously everybody has heard, but just to briefly talk about it, that there is a rope lying on by the wayside and there's a traveler going and it is little bit dark. It is neither bright light nor it is pitch dark, it is sunset. And so he accidentally steps upon the rope. And not knowing that the rope is a rope, he projects a snake upon it. Oh, this is a snake, and it caught my leg and it bit me. And then he faints or he gets all scared and starts sweating and even passes out because he thinks he has been bitten by the snake. Until a wise man comes and shines a flashlight and says, you know, why are you crying? It is not a rope. I mean, it is not a snake. It is a rope. And you don't need a doctor. You don't need to be crying. It is a simple rope. And you projected a snake because you did not see the rope as a rope. So this world is nothing but that consciousness. This whole everything is actually just an expression of that one Lord. All bodies, all minds, all intellects, all objects, emotions, thoughts, everything is nothing but that one consciousness. But because of our ignorance of vasanas, because of our lifelong ignorance of many lifetimes, we do not see this world as the Lord. And then we project upon it that he is Pankaj and she is so and so, and he is my friend and he is my enemy, and this is belongs to my religion and this one doesn't, and this is my nationality. So not seeing the world as the Lord, we project all the differences, and this is my property and that is yours, and this. And that's why, you know, people, great saints like Mahatma Gandhi, he called everybody Harijan. He said they are all the Lord's children. He had no distinction. You know, he loved even the British who were persecuting the Indians. He did not hate them in his heart. So we, like Jesus, he said, love thy neighbor as thyself. You know, no matter who that neighbor is. So the saints can see that oneness. They can see the consciousness. Because why? Why do they see it? Because they have first discovered it within their own heart. You cannot see the Lord outside until you see him first in your heart. And that's why he says, Atma Bhavastha, I am stationed in your heart, find me. There was a very famous saint in India in the 17th century called Mahamati Prannath, and he, in one of his very famous lines, Pehle aap pehchano, recognize yourself who you are. And without knowing yourself, you cannot know, bina aap chine par brahm ko kaun kahe main jano. You cannot know that Brahman, that consciousness, unless you have recognized them in your heart. So that is what we practice in meditation. And I think those who don't meditate, I would strongly encourage you to learn and start, because that is the very, very powerful technique. Those who do it correctly and do it with full attention can get very close to that inner self, the inner life. So once you see the Lord within, then it is very easy to see the Lord out. In fact, there was a very famous saint in India called Raman Maharishi who lived in the 20th century. And anybody went to him with any question, any problem, he said, to whom is this? Like somebody says, I have this problem of my, you know, I have no money, or I have no job, or I have poor health. So he says, who has the problem? He says, I have the problem. He says, who are you? He says, who am I? Then he will give his name. He'll say, but that name was something was given to you. Your name is, you say, my name is Radhakrishnan. That was a name given to you by your parents. You say, I'm a Hindu. That is a religion you were born in. You can change to from Hindu to Muslim. You say, I'm a male. Again, that is your body. You have this body. So male, a body is something you own. And you say, I'm short or tall, or I'm happy or unhappy, or I'm intelligent or unintelligent. Those are all the attributes. Those are all the descriptions. But who are you really? Inquire within. And so Raman Maharishi never answered anybody's questions. He would go and answer, tell everybody, go and find out to whom is the problem. You say, I have this problem. Okay, to whom is the problem? So I have, suppose you go, Raman Maharishi ji, I have a question. He say, okay, who has the question? So he made people think, and his presence was so powerful. I haven't had the good fortune to meet him. He passed away in the 1940s or 50s, but people say that when you went and sat in front of him, even for a few minutes, all your questions were answered. He did not need to speak. His presence was so powerful. They say even today, if you go to the place where he's buried and you sit there and meditate, you can feel his presence. That much power he had. So people, when they sat in front of him, he made them think that who are you really? Pay attention to that and see who has the problem. And once you realize that I am not this body, this mind or intellect, but I am that consciousness, then I don't have any problems. Physical problems are to the body, health problems. Emotional stress and strain is to the mind. Success and failure is to the intellect. But I am the consciousness. It does not mean that you shouldn't take care of your body, mind and intellect. Yes, you have to do that. But do that as you take care of your car. Just as you have your car serviced every 5,000 miles, so have your body checked and your mind. So do things to keep them healthy, but without identification that I am that. Just as I am not the car, I am not the body. So when you do with that attitude, then A, you come closer to the truth. You come closer to the truth. And secondly, you can distance yourself from your physical and mental problems. And that is what we teach and that is what we practice, that when problems arise, say, I have a lot of stress, my mind is very upset. So either you can say, I am upset and I am so stressed. Or you say, no, I am fine, but my mind is stressed. My mind is upset. The mind has the problem. And the moment you can distance yourself and watch the thoughts, and watch the stressful thoughts in the mind, immediately the problem becomes less. Immediately the stress becomes less. And that's what we learn in meditation, that be a witness. Watch what is happening in your mind. And when you practice that throughout the day, being an observer of the mind, then when the mind is under stress, you become aware. Okay, my mind is under stress. There is some problem at work or at my home or at my family. But when you become a witness, then that mind automatically quiets down. Because they say a watched mind is a quiet mind. So that is what they say, that constantly stay with that understanding that I am that awareness. You know, in the past we have talked about that constantly remember the Lord. You can chant his name, you know, when you wake up in the morning, when you go to bed at night. When you see anything, you know, anything you do successful, be grateful to him. That is good. But a further step is to say that I am that consciousness. And that is one step further in your spiritual journey where you say that everything that you see is that one consciousness and I am that consciousness too. And so everything is that one. So that oneness, the Advaita, the true Advaita of Vedanta only comes when I see myself as consciousness and everybody as consciousness. Not that I am the consciousness, I am God and all of you are my servants. Like some of these prophets do that. You know, they say, I am God. And so you all have to serve me and you all have to do as I. No, that's not the understanding of Vedanta. The true understanding of Vedanta is to see oneness. And everybody is that divinity. Yes, there might be a teacher, you know, there might be a Swami or a Swami Chinmayananda or Ishwarananda when they are giving talks. Yes, you have to learn and you have to respect them. Just as when you go to school or college, you have to respect your math professor or your physics professor. But a true understanding of Vedanta only comes when he says that you go within and you see the Lord within and then you see them outside. So, in meditation, they say that it has to be a constant effort. It cannot be a part-time. In fact, there is a very beautiful verse in the sixth chapter, which we just did. I don't know if any of you were here this Thursday. We did that. Yatha dipo nivatastaha nengate sopama smrita yogi no yata chittasya. So, he says, just as a lamp, when it is lit, and there is no breeze, you know, say there is a corner where there is no breeze. And that light, that candle or that lamp, the flame flickers without flickering, just goes upwards. And there is absolutely no flickering in that flame. So similarly, a yogi who is thinking about the Lord or a true devotee, his mind is totally focused upon the Lord and nothing else. And just as the flame is constantly going upwards, you never see a flame going sidewards or downwards. So a yogi's mind is constantly focused upward. Upward does not necessarily mean up in space, but up in consciousness, up towards the Lord, because the Lord we consider. Of course, we always say, oh, Bhagavan, we look up because our idea is up physically. But up physically is not only the physical plane, but up in the higher level of consciousness. He's somebody higher than us. So constantly remembering the Lord and keeping the direction upwards, just as that lamp, without flickering. So that attention, when it is done, then he says, to that person, I myself reveal it. Jnana deepena bhasvata. Like a brilliant light of knowledge, I make that knowledge clear to that person. See, we have to put our effort. You cannot just say, I'm going to sit down and wait for the Lord. One day he will come and make things clear. No, that's not going to happen. We have to put our effort. We have to do our prayers and puja and meditation and service and karma yoga and go to the teacher and learn and read and practice. But then there comes a place where you say, I have done my best, Lord. That's all I can do. Baki ab tere haath mein. Now you do what you have to do. And he will, because he is always waiting. You know, Swamiji in his commentary talks about the sunlight. You know, the sunlight is shining all the time, but you have your windows closed, black, tight. And then you say, my house is dark and I'm hitting the walls. You know, it's your own fault. All you have to do is open the window. And the sunlight doesn't have a choice. The sunlight is not going to say, I'll only go into the house of the people who are good and the people who are wicked, I will not. The sunlight, the sun has its nature to give light. But when you open your window, the sunlight will come in. If you close your window, the sunlight will not. So the Lord or consciousness, the Lord within has no choice. He is within you. He cannot leave you. That's another thing. You know, there is nowhere for him to go. He has to be with you at all time. All you have to do is open the windows of your mind. You know, there is a very beautiful bhajan, Man ki aankhe khol. Baba, man ki aankhe khol. It's a very beautiful bhajan where it says, open the eyes of your mind, O wise person, and see the Lord within. And that is called realization. That is called God realization or self-realization, is to experience the presence of the Lord within as the life, as the consciousness. And then Swamiji in his tape, in his commentary in the book, talked about Savikalpa Samadhi and Nirvikalpa Samadhi. There was not very well explained. I'm sure he must have done it earlier in the Gita. So I thought people who may be reading the commentary may have some question about what is Savikalpa and what is Nirvikalpa. In stages of self-realization, they describe two stages. One is with form and one is formless. So when I start my spiritual journey and at the final step, when we have already crossed and we have gone over all the worldly things and we become one with the Lord, initially you may see him with form and you may see God standing in front of you as Jesus or Krishna or Shiva or Mother Goddess or whatever form you worship. But that is still inferior. Why? Because you are still seeing him as separate. See, I am here and the Lord is standing in our Puranas. They say, usko darshan ho gaye. He was meditating for 40 years, sat in one place and then he opened his eyes and Lord Vishnu was standing in front of him. Now that is good because that was his desire to see the Lord in a particular form. But that is still one step lower, because even then there is a slight difference. Okay, me, I am there and God is standing in front of me. That is called Savikalpa. But the highest state is called Nirvikalpa or formless, where there is no form. God does not have a form. He is all-pervading consciousness. And there is no separation between God and me. So that is the highest. And that is what we have been talking all day, all morning. that state of oneness. And that's why in the beginning it is good to worship God as a particular form. It is easier to relate to God as a baby Krishna or a baby Jesus or, you know, Shiva sitting in meditation. It is easier to relate to God with a form. But the highest state of understanding is that that form I am seeing is an expression of that formless. And that form I am seeing and that formless are one. And when you see that, then you have no problem. You can continue to love Shiva, but you have equal respect for Krishna and Buddha and Jesus, and because they are all that one. So you can continue to love the form. We are not saying that you should give up the form and say, from today onwards, this Shiva's shivling, I'm going to throw it aside. I'm worshipping the formless. No. You continue to love the Lord in the form, but then see Him as the formless entity everywhere. This Krishna who is in my temple, in my house, is there everywhere. He's not only in my temple, but He's there in my heart, and He's there in all the hearts. So that is the highest, and that is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So that is what the essence of this verse is, that I remove their ignorance. And ultimately that is what the Lord's compassion is, that you turn towards me, you think about me at all times as much as possible, you serve me, you love all beings as my expression, do all activities devoted to me, any of your successes, any of your achievements, you dedicate to the Lord, oh Lord, it is because of you. And when you do that, and if there is a failure, Lord, I didn't do something correctly, that's why I failed, I'll try better next time. So when you devote everything to the Lord and work for Him, then He will make your life better. He will make you, you know, see Him. And then once you become one with Him, then for such a person, no joy in the world can compare. They say that the greatest joy you can think of, greatest joy, is not even 1 millionth or 1 billionth of a joy of a saint who has become one with the Lord. And for a saint, even heaven, you know, we say heaven is a wonderful place, you know, I'll go there and I'll enjoy all the food and I'll enjoy all the comforts. And for a golfer, he'll say, I'll play golf, you know, 365 days. But none of those joys of heaven even compare even to an iota of the joy enjoyed by a rishi, by a great sage who has become one with the Lord. And for such people, they say, even heaven has no meaning. They are happy where they are, and if they go to heaven, fine. If they don't go to heaven, fine. If God sends me back again to serve the world, I'm fine. If He keeps me with Him, I am fine, because I'm already with Him. I'm already with the Lord, and it doesn't matter where He places me. He can never run away from me. And that's what, in another place, Tulsidas Ji tells Ram. He says, you are with me at all times. Where can you go? There is nowhere for you to go. And that is true. God has no place to go with, because He's with us at all times. So that is the essence of this beautiful verse. We have about 10 minutes, so we'd like some comments, some questions, some discussion will be nice. Yes. Yeah, so not understanding that I am of the nature. We look for happiness in objects, but I am of the nature of bliss. When I understand that, then objects do not give me happiness. When I am permanent, I understand that, then I do not hold on to the body. When it comes time to drop the body, I willingly do that. And we find these saints were always ready to give up their life. They had no fear. Jesus, when He was being led to, He was absolutely fearless, because He had understood, I am the consciousness, I am not this body. So then they do not cling on to the body and they do not identify. And if when it comes time when I'm getting old, and the body will one day will get old, you know, nobody can stay forever. And when it comes to drop, I can willingly drop the body. Then they don't cling on to that. Having understood that I am that permanent existent Sat. This body is only a cloth I am wearing, just as my cloth when it gets old, I have no problem changing it. You know, I have an old shirt and it has holes. I'll just throw it and buy a new shirt. You know, Vasamsi Jirnani Yatha Vihai, in the second chapter, Sri Krishna says, Vasamsi Jirnani Yatha Vihai, Navani grihnati naroparani. Just as a person gives up old clothes and buys new clothes, tatha sharirani vihai jirnani anyani samyati navani dehi. So similarly, the individual gives up the body, and if he has to take a new body, he willingly takes it. He has even death has no fear for that individual. Yeah, I'm sure among the bishops and Pope and a lot of them have done a lot of tapas, a lot of austerity. I'm sure they realize a lot of them have experienced the truth. So it's not that only people who are studying the Bhagavad Gita can be realized. And you can realize sometimes just by love and love for the Lord and all that. But I think sometimes the institutional culture is the one that inhibits them. And I'm sure there are a lot of saintly people among them too, because so many of them, spend years in prayer and meditation, and some of these nuns, who devote their whole life. So I'm sure a lot of them are very close to the truth, but I think it's the institutional, because it's the power, that we have to maintain our power and we have to keep the faithful in line. And I think that is the, and it happens in all the religions, it's there everywhere, because when power takes over, that's why the pure knowledge is very important. One must have pure knowledge, and then everything else falls in place. Otherwise, we get stuck on the externalities of religion. That's why the word Chinmaya means pure knowledge, and that's why our mission is called Chinmaya Mission. Of course, it was after Swami Chinmayananda, but also the idea of Chinmaya means that we are trying to spread this pure knowledge to the best of our ability, Like, we don't have an acharya here, but I listen to them and then I try to talk whatever little I know. But the idea is that one has to go to the essence of the scriptures, not focus on the... And same thing to the essence of the Bible and the essence of the Quran and what the essence is, not focus on the externalities.